Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. It's time to look back at all the action across both days of this week's Champions League. The first legs of the round of 16 are complete. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me is the one and only transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yep, Champions League guru tonight. Could have done with a goal guru, really, couldn't we, in the Champions League this week? The goal fest, it was not, but it was very competitive. And, you know, I think there's just a sense here that teams just didn't want to give a lot away and be out of the tie. And certainly, I think that's what we come out of this all with. You know, we've had four fixtures over the past 2 days, and all of them, in a sense, are still alive.
Yeah, definitely. Very much so, I think, in that regard. Look, goals are for the Europa League. We know that, and the Europa Conference League. And for those of you who like goals, UE Ultras will be live on this channel first thing tomorrow morning, already recorded and ready. So that'll be out. Make sure you're tuned in. Let's get stuck in to the Champions League first, though. And let's start with Porto Arsenal. What were your three takeaways from the game in the Dragao tonight?
Mate, honestly, I wasn't sure I could get three takeaways as we were heading into the late stages of this game. A thrilling affair it was not, but it was drama in the end. I wasn't sure what to make of Porto's game plan, because for a lot of this game, I've got to say it was drab, right? But actually, maybe that's a compliment to Porto. And I saw a lot of Arsenal fans on social media talking about the fact that this game was not fun. There was play acting, there was time wasting, there was a lot of breaking up play and just like little disruptive fouls. The referee was blowing his whistle a lot in this game, trust me. But this is an Arsenal team that had just won 6-0 and 5-0. So what are Porto going to do? Go and play expansive football against a team that have shown they can absolutely kill you if you do that?
Well, no, Conte South side's never going to be playing that much expansive football anyway. But yeah, I take your point.
Yeah, but this is the thing, isn't it? You know, I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Porto across this season, and I got the impression that this is not something new. I mean, even in the commentary of the two different commentaries that I listened to at various parts of this game, they kept going back to the fact that, you know, Porto were in this game just to congest the centre of the field, to force Arsenal to play in a different way, to cut out the opportunities for Martinelli and Saka to make their mark on a game. Well, sounds like a good game plan to me. And ultimately, it's paid off. I mean, Porto had to win this first leg. They had to. I mean, they played that up in the media quite a lot before the game. You know, a lot of the media outlets in Portugal were talking about the fact it was a huge night and they had to win if they were going to go through this tie. It didn't look like they were going to get that goal. But then Galeno comes up trumps big time late on. I'll talk about him in a separate point. But this is a marvellous win for Porto. I mean, they said on the commentary again that they were celebrating like they've won the Champions League. Well, they've won a massive Champions League fixture and they've given themselves a chance to make it through. So they've got every right to celebrate like that. And ultimately, if Arsenal fans were bored by this game plan, then tough, because Porto have gone out there and they have absolutely pulled it off and they've got a result that nobody was expecting.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that, one, this isn't a Porto vintage. And no pun intended, I suppose. But this isn't a team that has been as good as the Porto teams we've seen in recent years. That much is very clear. The fact that they've already fallen away in the league behind Sporting and Benfica is testament to the fact that they have fallen off a level from where they were in previous years. But they do know how to execute a game plan, and they have been at this level of the competition for a number of different years under Conte Sarr. He has learned how to manage these ties. He's learned how to manage expectations as well. And I think this is it. Nobody gave them a chance in the British media. And I think that, one, that was almost certainly underestimating what this Porto team can do in sport. And I'm not saying they're going to go through, because I think that at the Emirates, Arsenal are a force to be contended with. But they, as you say, they had to get something out of this game. And I thought that this was going to be a tough assignment for Arsenal. I thought it would probably be a draw. But for Porto to snatch a win like that, you actually look at the game, the best chances, well, the best chance, there wasn't loads of chances. The best chance fell to Galeno in the first half. And then he scores an absolute wonder goal out of almost nothing, apart from a slight bit of stoppy Arsenal defending at the end. But as you say, the game plan worked to perfection. And if people thought that Porto were going to roll over at the Dragão, where they have an incredible record, especially in this competition, then they had another thing coming from the start. And actually to play it the way that they did, I thought was very, very smart from Conceição.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, shouts out to Pepe as well. We've got Juan in the comments saying, what a performance by Pepe. Yeah, 40 years old. I think the oldest player to figure in the Champions League knockouts. Yeah, marvellous. And brilliant. What a man. Shame he's only run this competition one time, really, because he probably deserved to have done it more times than that across his 300-year career. But yeah, fair play to Pepe. Look, let's move on to Arsenal as point two. Are Arsenal wise enough yet? That's my big question. That's what I want to take away from this. Like, this team really, I guess, we have to remember it is still in its infancy. I mean, last year it was too soon to challenge for the Premier League. And this season, let's be honest, it's too soon for them to challenge to win the Champions League. We did our rankings. I put them in at fifth, and I said I genuinely think that this Arsenal team can make the semi-finals, but I don't think they've got enough in them to actually get to the final. Sometimes I watch Arsenal, and when things are good, they're very, very good. But when things are tense, they really are tight. And this was an example of that. You know, again, listen to the commentary on the game tonight. They were lauding Arsenal for going to Porto. And this is before the goal was conceded. They were talking about the fact they kept a clean sheet in a place that was a tough place to go. And they were going back and they built a foundation.
Which is all fine. Like,
that's all fine. But now it doesn't look so good, does it? I mean, now you're looking back on it. An Arsenal team that had almost 70% possession, failed to register a shot on target. And yeah, it's good to dominate play. But to not have a shot on target is a concern. And I'm going to go back to something that I said a few times on Patreon this season, and that seems a bit silly on the back of them scoring 6 and 5. But Arsenal's top players up front aren't as reliable as they seem, or as they probably are going to need to be as we get to the final months of this season. You look at this match, Martinelli and Saka are shackled. Trossard misses opportunities that come his way. And my fear for them is that they might lack the regular goal scorers that are needed at this level, at this point in time of their growth. I think
it's hard
again,
because that feels reactionary considering what we've seen recently.
But it's not. I mean, this is the thing. I've said
when
this
you go further back.
When so you go further back, and I've tried to, like, I've given Arsenal credit when they've come away from West Ham and Burnley, and I've like, actually they've surprised me here. I didn't think that this team could do that. But is it all emotional? That's what I'm wondering now. Is it just that they, when they're like, yeah, we're great, we're so good, and the goals are going in and they're loving it, and then when things go the other way, I'm just not sure. Like, again, Liverpool's goal power across the five players that they rotate across the front.
Four second half goals tonight, right?
Four second half goals tonight, and it's their second string attack, right? And they're still scoring four goals. Man City, whatever you say about them in terms of their form, whether at their best of them, and they've still got Haaland that you're going to be able to rely on in big moments and in big games. When it comes to game management, you just got to worry a little bit for Arsenal in terms of whether they can do it yet. And it's fine if they can't, because this team has been running before you would expect it to walk across the last two seasons. And actually, the trajectory of them has been amazing. But it's a big test now. They've still got a good chance of going through in this game. And of course, they can go and beat Porto at home. Only 1-0 down here. And actually, maybe it's a good challenge for them to have to overcome, to be honest. It means that they've got to go and attack. But it's an interesting thing to consider that when they've gone and smashed in goals for fun recently, they've gone there and not had a shot on target.
I think it's a weird one, isn't it? Because if this game ends 0-0, and you know Ethan quite rightly points out that he thought Porto did a great job restricting Arsenal to those shots on target, and the defensive performance was good. I think the flip side of this is, and maybe where I'd argue the naivety comes rather than in those striking options, is that at 0-0, Arsenal are in complete control of this tie because they can go out and attack at home without feeling like a second goal could be the absolute antidote. And when it comes to what we're looking for and what we're trying to deal with, if Arsenal get out of here at 0-0, it's different to them losing 1-0. And obviously it is, but now Porto can sit back and absorb again and hit on the counter in this second time. And whereas you're kind of flipping it as the naivety here for me, if you will, is that they lose the ball so easily in these final moments. And yes, it's a wonder strike, 100%. But the flip side to that is if they don't give the ball away and let it come back at them 2-3 times in the final couple of minutes, then actually they come out of this at 0-0 and they're right in control of the tie going into the second leg.
Listen, the third point just is a quick one. Galeno is obviously the hero of the day, but he also produced a miss I will never forget in the entirety of my life. I've seen people miss some amazing chances through the years, but Galeno's double miss is just insane. His first effort is obviously fine and it hits the post and...
Back at him quickly, man.
Absolutely. Like, he can miss it. But, like, the fact that that rebound doesn't go in, like, the guy inside the stadium played the goal music. Like,
yeah, well, this is it. It the crowd sort of half celebrated. That was the really weird thing. It was like, there's no way he can miss.
I couldn't believe it wasn't a goal.
I don't think I've ever seen that before. Well, like, he wheeled away to celebrate and then realized the ball hadn't gone in the back of the net.
Well, it was kind of sat on the wrong side of the net. It was just like rolling across it. And like from various angles in that stadium, like there's no way you would have been able to tell that they didn't go in the goal. But I've watched it back about 7 times now. And it's more fun every single time. That would have been sitting with him horribly tonight if he hadn't scored an absolute worldie at the end of the game. Like,
pulled out a complete perler.
What a strike. Like, people can criticise Raya if they want. I'm not having any of it. It's an absolutely brilliant strike.
He has that in his locker as well. I've seen him do that before for Braga in the Europa League. So this isn't new. I did enjoy this from Jay Wigwam 3, who said, feels a lot like they're similar to Liverpool the year of Karius. Great first 11, but the bench drops off quickly. And I think there's maybe some merit in that, especially with the injuries that we've seen recently. The bench tonight didn't feel that strong, but with Fabio Vieira coming back, with Jesus yet to come back, there's probably a little bit more on
Ramsdale's that. Ramsdale's better than Karius.
Ramsdale is better than Karius. That is very much true. LW2 says, hi Ranks FC, if you could name 7 tactical trends currently in world football, what you think football fans should know about, what would they be?
Blimey.
Sam thinks he's writing an article and fishing for answers. It might be something that we can look for an actual episode there at some point, but we'll...
I'm not digging that into a half-hour Champions League show.
No, we're absolutely not. We're going to come back to that, but we're going to start with Napoli-Barcelona, which is the other game tonight. My first takeaway is that this was very obviously two teams low on confidence and spark, basically. And if you put this to someone who just woke up from the 90s or 2000s, told them it was the champions of Spain against the champions of Italy, they would have laughed at you. Because if you think the Porto-Arsenal game was low on quality, this was a shambles in many, many ways. It was painfully...
That's everything we expected then. That's everything we expected.
It was painfully pedestrian for lots of the game. And although Barcelona were marginally the better side, I thought, it was only because they were sort of slightly less all over the place than Napoli were. And this game just felt like it needed someone to come in and take it by the scruff of the neck. And nobody was able to whatsoever. And they spoke a lot about this game on the commentary and about how this competition could be the saving grace for two seasons, which have basically gone down the pan at this point for both. And I thought it was interesting because neither of these teams is getting anywhere close to winning the Champions League with performances like this. Now, it was like every time they got into the opponent's final third, the entire thing fell apart. And for teams with the amount of quality in the final thirds that these two sides have, it was at points like quite difficult to watch. And the fall off from where both were last year to where they are right now is tremendous. It's incredible to see what's going on in that regard. So I'm kind of intrigued by it, and I'm glad that I watched it, but it was really painful for someone who, you know, has enjoyed watching both of these sides immensely over the last couple of years to see them play in a game this average. That was my first and probably main takeaway from
all of it. Does not surprise me. I mean, nobody's enjoyed watching either of these sides recently, have they? Like, not recent.
No, not really.
This has lived up to its billing if it was a war fest. I'm surprised there was actually two goals in it. Were they two mistakes?
Well, I was going to come on to this because the two goals are scored by Robert Lewandowski and Victor Osimhen. Now, they're both quite good finishes.
I've heard about them. They're good players, right?
Yeah, they're both very good players. Two big number nines, basically, coming up trumps for their respective clubs. And my original point here before Osimhen scored was that Lewandowski was doing a far better job as Barcelona's number nine than Osimhen was as Napoli's, because the way that Lewandowski tried to bring players into play and the way that he tried to make the attack tick around him was a stark contrast to the other end of the pitch, where it felt like Osimhen's head went down every single time something didn't go. And look, maybe we're talking about a player on his way out of Napoli, and maybe that's why it's a little bit different. But it just felt like Lewandowski was doing his best to encourage Barcelona into the final third. And every time something didn't come off for Osimhen, it was hands up in the air, it was head down, and there was a quite stark difference. But they've both come up with a goal. Now, the Lewandowski goal is better worked. It's a nice little ball from Pedri, and he tucks it home inside. And the Osimhen goal is basically Iñigo Martinez failing to control Osimhen, who basically pushes him over and turns around and scores. But it wasn't the way the game flowed. It wasn't the game that you expected. It was just the fact that Osimhen was stronger than Iñigo Martinez. That was simply the difference. And to be honest, Napoli have kind of got away with one here. Now, Barcelona will probably be the happier side. They played better. They've come away with a draw in the away leg. And, you know, they go back having thought, well, with a little bit more control in the final third, we should probably have put this game away. But instead, it now comes back as, you know, level pegging. And look, there's a little bit of time for Napoli to try and turn things around. And look, Zitano says the Napoli-Barca game was average or bang on, but that's also a reflection of their form this season. 100%. My kind of third takeaway is that Calzona, who only had one training session and has come back into this Napoli side as their third manager this season, has an incredible amount of work to do. And I saw some people discussing the idea of there being a new manager bounce or, you know, not being able to get that. I don't think he's had enough time to have even affected a new manager bounce here. If there's going to be a new manager bounce, we'll probably see it at the weekend after there's been a couple of sessions with the coach. This was very much have one session, go to the press conference, play a game. And Napoli were disjointed. They're all over the place, but mostly I thought their heads had dropped. And actually that's going to be the biggest tackle and biggest challenge for Calzona over the next couple of weeks. It is that he has to somehow try and get this team to band together again, because it feels like the fall off from what Spalletti did last season has emotionally damaged the core of this team, in so far as you can't recognize them when they're playing. There is no link up play. There is no, you know, moments of interchange. The midfield has lost all of its spark. There is no connection between Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen anymore. In fact, the most effective player for Napoli, I thought, was Politano on the other wing, who at least was trying to do things. But there is so much wrong here. The tapestry has been torn apart, and trying to stitch it back together in the limited time he has available now is an incredibly difficult job for an interim manager.
Yeah, for sure. I guess the last point to you is there any home advantage for Barcelona? I mean, it's certainly not like not going to the Nou Camp for a second leg, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's very much not. And, you know, their form at Montjuic has been poor. And actually, it's been their away form that's been better in La Liga across the course of this season. But I just don't think that unless Napoli can find something in the next 3 weeks, there is a little bit of a gap. So they have that to contend with. But unless they can find some sort of cohesion very, very quickly, I can't see any way in which Napoli turn this around.
Interesting.
All righty. Well, we'll leave Wednesday's action there and we'll come on to Tuesday's action, where we're going to start with PSV 1, Borussia Dortmund 1. This was your game, DJ. What did you make of it?
Another cracker. I'm not going to talk about the boring aspects of it. Look, I mean, the top point is that, for me, Dortmund should be taking a lead back home. The penalty decision, Jack, was crushing, right? And I don't particularly want to sit here and moan about a refereeing decision right now and use it as a top talking point, but it's unavoidable. When Mats Hummels takes down Tillman in the box early in the second half, the referee points to the spot and I am immediately like, well, that won't be a pen. That just won't be a pen. And it's given. It's not, the decision's not changed. Like, he touches the ball clearly. And I don't understand how, I know it has to be a clear error, blah, 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 blah.
I thought it was the follow through. I thought it was the follow through.
It's just not a pen, man. Like, I'd be fuming. I mean, Hummels was fuming, wasn't he, when on social media and talked about it. He said, this is the moment. Basically, this is the moment you've been waiting for. Here's my rant. I just can't believe that, it went down to that decision. Luke De Jong steps up, scores the pen, keeps PSV alive in the tie. But really felt like a kick in the guts for Dortmund, that one. And it affected their night for sure. It took the rhythm out of them a little bit. I mean, it was a tough night anyway. This was a really it was a difficult fixture from both perspectives, really, in terms of game plans. I'll talk about that a bit more in a second. But yeah, I just felt that the penalty decision was extremely harsh, and it really robbed Dortmund of a win that would have set them up brilliantly to make it into quarterfinals.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because I thought PSV were the better side. And yet, it does feel difficult to stomach from a Dortmund perspective. I can see why he gave it. I will say that. I think the follow-through is high enough to justify it looking like a foul. But I can equally appreciate Mats Hummels' frustrations by saying he won the ball. He made two really good, clean slide tackles before this. And this one just felt like it was maybe a stretch too far. And yeah, it did. It was harsh, but without being incorrect, like blatantly incorrect, I thought.
Yeah, fair enough. I would be fuming if that was my team and that decision was given in those sorts of circumstances. But my second point was that it probably was a fair result. While Dortmund are unlucky, PSV did still manage to have a fair amount of shots. And I think that coming away with a draw is about right. PSV are one of the most informed teams in Europe. We already knew that. This stretches their unbeaten home run to 31 games in all competitions, which is outstanding and just underlines really that this is a good result for Borussia Dortmund still. Tillman and Bakayoko both missed chances that could have actually put PSV in the game before they got that penalty. But chances generally were pretty evenly shared, I felt. Dortmund had a game plan which seemed to be that they would pin PSV back in their own half and try and play high. But PSV did well, actually, to come to terms with that. And they played their way out of some tricky situations throughout the night.
It seems like a very risky game plan when you're putting Schlotterbeck up against Johan Bakayoko.
It definitely was a risky game plan. But I think Dortmund just really felt that they needed to get a goal out of this game. Maybe they just knew that, you know, getting out of there with a clean sheet was going to be a near on impossible task. And so maybe they just felt like it was the best way was to alleviate as much pressure as they could by trying to keep the ball away from their goal for as long as possible and actually, you know, try to bring their own front line into the game. Didn't think that Jadon Sancho had a night to write home about. But point three, Daniel Marlon did. You know,
ghost of the past, wasn't it?
Ghost of the past, yeah. Goes back to his old club, scores an absolute belter. Yes, a deflection, but still a lovely goal. Felt like he had a directness to his game that I'm always on the fence about Marlon. I think he's a really, really good player, but I often don't see it when I actually watch a full Dortmund game. And it's frustrating. And I'm sure I'm not the only person that feels this way. And his future was up in the air, wasn't it? Even in the last transfer window.
Yeah,
but at his best, you can imagine him playing in like some of the best teams in Europe. but I often come away just feeling a little bit meh, like you've been sold a little bit short. But this is one of those games when it felt good, and everything it was trying to do, maybe this goes hand in hand with the fact that Dortmund were playing high and tried to force PSV backwards. But he had a good night, and obviously he took his opportunity well. He made the opening for himself.
Yeah, it was a good feat.
Beautifully. He's the first Dutchman to score against a Dutch team in the Champions League since Arjen Robben for Bayern Munich against PSV in October 2016. So it's been a long time since this one was replicated. But it was a muted celebration from him. But, mate, he must have been screaming inside because he ain't had that many moments like this. Yeah, on another day, it would have been the winner.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it was interesting, and Alan brings this up. He says Dest is making people look like fools out there. It's a funny one because it was a good battle on that wing between Dest and Marlon.
Yeah.
And I thought both of them had really good games, which is a kind of funny space to be in, because normally if your winger's had an absolute stormer, then the fullback they're playing is the one that's been torched. Or if your fullback's had a stormer, then the winger they're playing has been pocketed. But actually, both of them had really good games. And I thought it was just an interesting one to keep an eye on. That battle down that side felt like the most interesting part of this game.
Yeah, some credit on both sides. But look, PSV, you said not to write them out of this tie. You felt like people might underplay their chances and that they deserved a bit more respect. And I appreciate actually you saying that when we were making the rankings. And I was like, yeah, I'm actually not giving them a fair crack of the whip. They've got a really good chance of going through here. Dortmund are going to have to be at their best to beat them in a second leg.
Yeah, I mean, they're creative and they're very, very fluid in attack around Luke de Jong, who's maybe the least fluid man on the pitch. Well, on the planet, perhaps. But, around him, things work in really nice ways. Yeah. I love the way that their midfield streams forward. I love the way that, you know, they get these wingers inside and make them start to play. And de Jong is actually the gravitational pull around which it all orbits. So, yeah, I think they've got a shot. I really do in Dortmund. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And I'm looking forward to that second leg. I'll come on to the final game then, which is Inter against Atletico Madrid. And three takeaways. So my first is Inter are relentless. If at first you don't succeed, try and try and try again. And eventually someone will deflect the Marko Arnautović shot into the back of the net. Arnautović more than anyone this applies to, because his hold-up work was really impressive when he replaced Thuram. He missed two glorious opportunities to give his side the lead, and then finally got his goal. But also Lautaro, who forced the goal after being uncharacteristically wasteful, and Thuram himself as well, who had his own chances in the first half before going off injured. And they just kept knocking and knocking and knocking at the door. And eventually it gave way. And I think this was really impressive because it could have gone heads down, right, with this Inter side. They could have looked at this and gone, right, Lautaro's not scoring. Thuram's gone off injured. Arnautović has had to come on. They've been frustrated with Arnautović. The crowd are getting on his back. And finally, he's the one. And look, there was great celebrations as well. One, Inzaghi said afterwards, they were delighted for him because he's been working so hard in training. But also, the players kind of flocking to him and getting around him felt like a big moment for Marko Arnautović, because his chances have been reasonably limited by Marcus Thuram. Mm. But he had to come in and make a difference. And when he was called upon in the biggest game this season so far for him, he was the one that made the difference, albeit at the third time of asking.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, it's I was expecting Lautaro to be the headline act. It doesn't turn out to be the case. You do need somebody to step forward. I mean, obviously, I've said at the top of the show, like, I worry about Arsenal when, you know, backs are against the wall, when you're struggling to get that breakthrough. Where's it going to come from? You know, you can't always win 5 and 6 nil. Where's that moment going to come from? And Inter are going to find themselves in situations like that. And deflected or not, it still found its way in.
Yeah, I mean, it was going in, so we'll give him the credit on that one. Maybe Sam Molina on the line should do better, but it's a little bit, it felt like the right thing to happen. It felt like the right result was achieved here. And it takes me on to number two, which is Atleti always seem to revert to type in the Champions League, and it hurts them. Now, there are caveats to how defensively minded they were. Firstly, that they're traveling to a dominant Inter side, and staying in the tie was obviously the main objective. objective achieved, Simeone will say. But the only reason that came to pass is that it was an off night for Inter in front of goal. As we mentioned, Atleti were well beaten here. Morata not starting through injury is also part of it. But I do think that Atleti need to give a bit more at the Wonder if they're going to turn this one around. And I think maybe he needs to be a bit braver in the middle. Both youngsters might be a gamble too far, but I'd really like to see one of Pablo Barrios or Arta Vermeeren start in this second leg to try and get a handle on the game in possession. Because in the second half in particular, Inter was so aggressively dominant and it was so one-sided that it kind of felt like Atleti went further and further and further back into their shell. And actually, when you kind of look at all of that put together, it didn't make any sense for them to not have an out ball. And it just felt like wave and wave and wave of Inter pressure. And eventually they cracked, because against this kind of talent, you always do.
Yeah, absolutely that. I mean, Vermeeren, do you think he's ready for a challenge like that? I mean, obviously it's easy.
Maybe not Vermeeren, but Barrios has played a lot this season. He's been trusted in big games already this season. I think maybe Barrios coming in.
Vermeeren's great, don't get me wrong, but
he's played in the Champions League, obviously. Well, he played in big games already, so it's not like he's unused to the competition.
No, I love him. It's just these fixtures are like, these are titanic battles, aren't they? I don't know if he's going to put him into matchups like that just yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think this might be one for Barrios. But yeah, I just, Atleti need to be braver if they're going to get anything out of this, because my third point is that there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that Inter can win this competition under Inzaghi.
I was going to say, how did you think that they're fair from here?
They didn't concede a shot on target in a Champions League game for the first time since 2006. Bastoni was absolutely immense at the back, and he would have rightly won man of the match if Barella hadn't put in one of the all-encompassing midfield displays that you'll see this season. Dominated a midfield with the experience of Saul and Koke and the guile of Rodrigo De Paul. He basically did it on his own. And it was no wonder that Simeone was telling Inzaghi that he needed to come off when he pulled up early on. Lautaro is top scorer in Serie A for a reason. He will not be this profligate if he's given these opportunities again. And it comes down to Inzaghi, because his system is so perfect for this team. The way they pull teams around with overloads, those switch balls. I don't think anybody's succeeded with more long passes in Europe this season than Inter. And that's because they have the ability to drag teams into small spaces and then look for that big switch to the on-rushing wing back. And I think Inzaghi doesn't get the credit he deserves, maybe outside of Italy, because he's undoubtedly a top five in the world manager. He's a phenomenal coach. And I think Inter look like the most complete side in Europe right now, even with just a 1-0 win here. And yes, Atleti are still in this tie, and this is very much not over. But in terms of performances, and a big performance against the toughest opposition I think they could have been handed, this was a masterclass at the Meazza. And it was... in some ways, it's such a joy to watch Inter play.
Yeah, and I mean, it is one of the tougher ties that we see at this stage of the competition. So it's worth bearing in mind. I mean, we've just seen games like, you know, Arsenal losing to FC Porto. So to go and beat Atletico Madrid in the first leg is obviously a good marker for where Inter are at. I think, look, generally, I mean, look across the last couple of days, we really haven't seen many goals, but as I said at the top, that kind of typifies where we're at right now and the edginess of just wanting to stay in the ties. A lot of these games, I think, are going to open up in the second leg. I'm not sure this one's going to. This doesn't seem to have the making of a tie that's suddenly going to open up. But what do you think Atleti do? Because they're not likely to go all guns blazing, are they?
No, they're probably not. And there is a sense of, okay, what do you have to do in order to stay in this game as much as anything else? Because as you know, we've just discussed, Inter have the ability to blow teams away. But I think that they need to be able to get Griezmann into the game more. Morata almost certainly has to start. Now, injury has curtailed his involvement here, so he was only able to come off the bench. But that combination has to be reinstated, I think. And there needs to be something a little bit bolder in that midfield, because there was no way of connecting the two. And it felt like Griezmann was incredibly isolated. Samuelino did his best getting up and down that left flank. But generally, I just thought that Atleti felt overwhelmed when they got numbers into the final third. And they're going to have to change that if they're going to turn this one around.
Very good, mate. Very good night of champions, despite the lack of goals.
As we say, the goals are coming tomorrow night here on the YouTube channel and on the Patreon. There is going to be AUE Ultras as well. So if you want to get stuck into that, please be my guest in the morning. There's lots on what games to watch and why. It's all very exciting and I'm excited about sharing it with you all. But for now, thank you very much to everyone who's tuned in and for giving us your questions and thoughts. I enjoyed this from Sebastian Sherwin to finish with. Up the ranks. Thank you very much, Sebastian. Cheers, up the ranks. Tim. Thank you so much for listening as well. We do appreciate you very, very much. Thank you for listening to all three episodes on the Ranks FC feed this week. There's been a lot of content. We appreciate that. But this is the last for a little while. We'll be back next week. For now, though, all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you all very shortly. Take it easy, gang. Peace.